Coming today on Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast.
Domestic violence happens in every single community, every religion, every income level, every education level, absolutely everywhere, every school, every neighborhood. And the people who are the most vulnerable are people who grew up with it, so we think it's normal, or people like me who grew up with none of it, and so we're very naive and we think it'll never happen to us.
Welcome to Breaking Free, a modern divorce podcast with Rebecca Zung and Susan Guthrie.
This is the place to hear other people's stories, to learn from the top experts in every related field, to also have some fun, laugh, and hang with two divorce attorney girlfriends who are also top family law litigators.
Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve family law matters peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert Scott Picard at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
And now we invite you to listen to today's show.
It's going to inspire you to transform and break free. Welcome to today's podcast. Our topic today is crazy love, why domestic violence victims don't leave, with New York Times bestselling author and TED speaker, Leslie Morgan Steiner. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. So today's very special guest is the best-selling author of four books, including one of the same name as this podcast, Crazy Love, which is her 2009 memoir about surviving domestic violence. And it was a New York Times bestseller, a People Pick, Book of the Week for The Week magazine. And it was the subject of the first TED Talk by a domestic violence survivor. That TED Talk has been viewed more than 5 million times so far. She's also a consultant and a thought leader on women's leadership, work-life balance, inspirational parenting, overcoming adversity, and surviving violence against women. We're excited to have her because she's also been a guest on the Today Show, National Public Radio, ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox News, MSNBC, and she's been profiled in a large number of publications. And so we're just thrilled to have her today on this very important but sensitive topic. So welcome, Leslie.
Thank you so much for having me.
Leslie, I'm very glad to have you here today for a number of reasons, one of which is that we have so many women who struggle in silence with domestic violence, and so many women who are powerful women. I once represented a woman. She was a hospital administrator. I've represented doctors, the most powerful women possible. You also are a powerful woman. You're Ivy League trained. You worked, you know, in big corporations. You've accomplished a lot. So a lot of people would look at you and think, how would she ever be a victim of domestic violence? But it's universal. It really knows no boundaries. So if you could, I think, tell people your story, those who haven't heard your TED Talk, take us back to that relationship and what happened there.
Well, the first thing I want to reiterate is that you're exactly right, that domestic violence happens in every single community, every religion, every income level, every education level, absolutely everywhere, every school, every neighborhood. And the people who are the most vulnerable are people who grew up with it, so we think it's normal, or people like me who grew up with none of it, and so we're very naive and we think it'll never happen to us. And that's what I was. I graduated from Harvard. I moved to New York City for what I thought was the best job on the planet. I was a writer and editor at 17 Magazine, and I met this fabulous man who had also just graduated from an Ivy League school. He worked at a big, impressive Wall Street bank. He was cute and funny and self-deprecating, and he adored me. And if you had told me that that man, within 2 years, would be telling me whether or not I could wear makeup, how short my skirts could be, whether I could spend Christmas with my family, and eventually holding loaded guns to my head. I would have said that you were crazy. I would have said that you got the wrong guy because he's sweet and wonderful. And I also would have told you that you had the wrong girl because I would never have let a man hurt me. That's what I felt like. And it doesn't happen that way. You know, they don't hit you on the first date. It happens very slowly and very seductively, and it's always disguised as love, which is why my memoir eventually was called Crazy Love, because it's crazy when you're in it. And as both of you know very well from your clients, when you're going through it, you feel like you're the only one. It's an intensely private experience, which is why it's so isolating. You know, I didn't know, honestly, that I was a domestic violence victim. I thought I was a strong, smart, independent woman in love with a troubled man who I was determined to help. And I would have lied to protect him. I told no one what he was doing because I was his protector, his champion. It's a very psychologically complicated situation, and no one wants to be abused. And it's very, very difficult and dangerous to leave an abusive partner.
Yeah, you know, I there's so much in that that rings a bell for me. I personally was in an abusive relationship myself, and it was that same thing that the person sort of isolates you over time, that what you referenced about not seeing your family for the holidays, or, you know, in my case, it was sort of separating me from my work, which was what gave me a lot of, financial independence, et cetera. And so I think it does happen slowly over time, and especially when it's not something that you're well acquainted with. How did you finally realize what was happening and find a way out of that relationship?
That's the most important question that we could discuss today. And the truth, the answer is really simple, is that I talked about it. I was very fortunate that I had two friends who realized, maybe they didn't know exactly what was happening, but they realized I was losing myself and that it had something to do with my marriage. And they very kindly confronted me. And I told them the truth, that he was abusing me and had been for years. And I wasn't able to leave him for 2 years after that, but breaking that silence and having friends who understood and supported me and loved me through that painful process was the beginning of my freedom. And that's one reason I speak out today, is that I want to speak to victims and tell them that not alone, but I also want to speak to the bystanders, the friends and the families and the police officers and the family court judges and the locksmiths and the children who all witness this and know what's going on, because we all need you to understand and not blame us and help us safely get out of what can be a very lethal situation. And I also just want to add two things. One is that I think that emotional abuse is just as bad as physical abuse. It's just as destructive. And also, I need to say that men are victims too. They're victims as children often, which is where
I was going to ask you to mention that.
Right. Yeah. And they also, and women abuse men too. You know, adult women abuse men, and also other men abuse men.
Yeah, I mean, even in same-sex relationships, there are men being abused by other men, or women being abused by other women.
Yes.
I mean, it happens all the time. There's somebody who's close to me now who was in an abusive relationship. The wife is somebody who has mental illness. And so between the bipolar and the borderline personality disorder, it becomes, you know, not necessarily physical, but definitely very psychological, which can be even more damaging sometimes, I think.
It's really true. And love and abuse should never go together. I mean, love is supposed to make you feel good and safe and supported. And so that's one of the biggest red flags about any kind of abuse, is that if you're in any way afraid of your partner or don't want to be with them or afraid to go home, that's a huge red flag.
Yeah. You talked in some of your other interviews about a memento that you keep from your abusive relationship. Can you tell what that was and why you keep it?
Which one is it? Because there actually are
a note. It was a note. The last note that he wrote you?
Oh my. So this is really complicated. We could do the whole interview on this. So when I finally left him, he sent me one last note. And I actually have a whole box of mementos from the relationship because I don't want to deny that it happened to me. I don't want to throw that box away. I have the broken wedding picture that he crushed over my head the last time he beat me and a few other little pictures and things. But the note that he wrote me, it's just so heartbreaking because it was sort of like a little kid wrote it. He had a little stick figure of himself on it. And he said, you know, goodbye, retard. That was his nickname for me. A funny thing to call somebody who went to Harvard. And, you know, it just said, I'm sorry that we didn't make it. And it was very sweet. And to me, it was that little boy in him who really was the person who I loved. He had been terribly abused as a little boy and he had lost himself through that and never gotten help. And that's who I fell in love with. But the person I left was the adult man who was holding guns to my head and who was going to kill me if I let him. And I think that's one of the most complicated things for a victim to understand is that you can love the little child in your partner, but you have to be aware that as an adult, they need to be held responsible for what they're doing and that you're not doing them any favor by staying. That in fact, the best thing you can do for an abuser is to leave him or her to signal that abuse and love should never go together and that they need help.
That's such an important, you know, distinction for people to make. And, you know, there was something else I read in one of a quote on something else you said, because I think there's been sort of a, and you say this, the blurring of the lines between this world of dominance and domestic abuse. And you say in your quote that it was blurred by 50 Shades of Grey. And I think that sort of there's that very important distinction between consenting adults and, you know, what happens in an abusive relationship. But what did you mean by that?
Well, it's just so true. I think there is not just now in our society, but over thousands of years, there's been a glamorization of abuse and of subjugation of women. And it's a very big problem that we face because we women are exposed to it from the time that we're little girls. And abuse is about power and control and dominance, and there's no consent involved. And even though I was an adult and I willingly married him and I went home to him and slept in the same bed with him every day, this psychological and physical and financial and geographic hold that he had over me made it almost impossible for me to leave. And impossible for me to leave without an army of friends and family members and police officers and other people who helped me leave. And, you know, we just have, there's so many examples that I could give, but like I'll just give two is, you know, what that we call domestic violence and murder in these situations, a crime of passion. It is not passion. It's calculated and cold-blooded. And abusers kill us because they think it's their right to kill the women in their lives because they think that they're superior. And there's nothing passionate about it. It is evil and angry and awful. And the last beating that I survived, it was as if my husband had been taken over by a demon. That was not the man I loved. That was a crazy person. And there was nothing seductive about it. And I didn't like it. And I, you know, as soon as he left, I called the police and I was never alone with him again. I was that scared. And even though it's been 25 years since I've seen him, if he walked into the room right now, I would start to shake because that's how afraid I am of him. So we do every single person a disservice by glamorizing abuse and saying that it is somehow something that we victims voluntarily go into and that there's anything having to do with love in there. It's not. That is not love.
Yeah. I mean, and I've heard of a concept in psychology called trauma bonding,
yes,
which actually occurs between a codependent victim and a psychologically disordered victim, like a narcissist or borderline personality disorder or something like that. And I think that there's a syndrome, probably mostly women, but maybe men too, of I can save this person. This person needs me. And we've seen it in like the Dirty John and, you know, even financial predators and people like
yes.
that,
yes.
you know, they're so broken. I need to save them. They need my love. And so would you agree that that's kind of maybe how some of it gets started?
Yes. In fact, feeling pity for somebody is an enormous red flag for any kind of abuse. And childhood victims of sexual assault, old people who are victims of elderly abuse, and domestic violence victims, believe it or not, we all feel sorry for our abusers, even though they are the more powerful person in the relationship. Because pity feels a lot like love. And every victim I've met has a big and generous heart. That's the one thing we all have in common. And abusers know to target people with that kind of generosity of spirit. We're very forgiving and understanding, and we want to protect our victims. And so pity is, you don't normally feel pity for somebody who you love. Pity should be reserved for, you know, like puppies or kittens, not grownups. And so if you are feeling sorry for somebody, I think that you should really take a look at that relationship and ask yourself why, and if that is really good for you, and if that really falls into your definition of what a loving relationship should be.
We're going to take a quick break now to talk about our newest sponsor, Hello Divorce. Divorce is hard enough on its own. You're thrown into the legal system. You have no idea what you're doing. Hello Divorce understands that, and they offer an affordable, convenient online option for Californians. Easy form preparation, instant access to legal information, loads of articles, affordable, convenient, and low-stress divorce.
One of the things I love the most about Hello Divorce is the sheer number of options that it gives you. When you sign up for your free account, you get access to their curated library of tools and resources, and you also get a 15-minute free personalized divorce strategy session. They have a do-it-yourself option for divorce, but they also have an option that gives you your own legal document assistant who will handle your entire divorce start to finish for you. You can even hire the a la carte services of an attorney just to make sure you're on track. Without having to pay an expensive retainer, you can purchase increments of time in as little as 30 minutes. So find out more at hellodivorce.com and be sure to let them know you heard about it at Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast.
Are you struggling with how to manage and handle a high conflict personality? Do you feel like everything you do is futile, or that your words are constantly being twisted? Breaking Free Mediation and Coaching is now offering a brand new coaching program called Coaching Through Conflict: How to Successfully Manage High Conflict Personalities. If you're dealing with a narcissist, a bipolar personality, or someone who's just simply overly difficult, this program is an absolute must. If you are ready to finally break free of this cycle of abuse and conflict, email us at bfmediation@gmail.com so that you can get started today. That's B as in boy, F as in Frank, mediation@gmail.com.
Coming up, more from Rebecca and Susan on Why Domestic Violence Victims Don't Leave, with New York Times bestselling author and TED speaker, Leslie Morgan Steiner.
And the only thing you can do to help yourself and to help the person who you love is to leave, and to find a way to leave safely.
Take a listen to our archive, where you can hear Rebecca and Susan discuss more topics on divorce in depth, including, should I stay or should I go? With divorce coach and podcast host, Kate Anthony.
But I was agonizing, and I said, how do you know when it's time to go? And he just looked at me really kindly, and he said, when you know, you'll know. And I was like, this is not helpful. God love you, but this is not the answer that I'm looking for.
And now we return to today's show.
You talk about red flags, and I think that's so important for our listeners to hear, because, you know, in one of our recent episodes, we had New York television journalist Tamsin Fadal on, and she was talking about how we may see red flags in relationships, but we have this tendency to, as she said, turn them pink by rationalizing them away. You know, we come up with our excuse, oh, they had a rough childhood, or they've had a bad day, or I I did something wrong. It will be better if I just fix me. And, you know, so maybe for our listeners, you've mentioned the one red flag, but what other red flags might they be looking for in determining whether they're in or looking at an abusive relationship?
Well, if you go to my website, Leslie Books, or any of the large domestic violence websites, there are lists of red flags. And it's really important to educate yourself about them before you fall in love. But some of the other ones that crop up very early are too much possessiveness. So he or she wants to call you all the time, wants to see you every day, knows your schedule, is very attached to you. Starting to dictate what you can wear, where you go. But I tell you, the thing that is the hardest about all of this is that it gets wrapped up in love. So what my ex did is he said, you know, I've been cheated on before and other women have broken my heart. So can you help me by just letting me know where you are all the time and who you're with so that I can feel safe and secure? Do you see how that works? It's a complicated kind of gaslighting. And you see that a lot. So it's really important to educate yourself about the warning signs and to even understand what the concept of gaslighting is so that you know if it's happening to you. And also if you know that if it's happening to your friend or your mother or your daughter or somebody at work, we all need to be more educated about the red flags of abuse. And another thing that's really important to understand, which goes back to what Rebecca said about trauma bonding, is that trauma bonding is real and it's seductive and powerful. And it takes the average victim 7 attempts to leave before they actually do. And I remember so many times I left after a particularly bad beating and I couldn't be away from him for more than about 10 minutes before I went back because I was so bonded to him. And I thought no one would ever love me again the way he did. No one would make me feel the way that he did. And it's crazy now to talk about it, right? To think that somebody who was trying to kill me made me feel loved. But that is what makes it so confusing. The feeling of love and fear and danger are a very intoxicating mix. And it takes a long time to extricate yourself and also a long time to leave safely because 70% of domestic violence homicides happen after we have ended the relationship. The abuser doesn't have anything to lose and our abandonment triggers their worst fears. Mm-hmm. So when you are getting ready to leave, yeah, you have to be very careful.
Yeah, I always think of OJ.
Yes, exactly. That's a prime example.
Yeah. So for anybody who's in an abusive relationship and they're listening to this podcast now and they're thinking, okay, this is me. I'm scared. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to leave. I don't know if I have the money or maybe he controls all the money or you know, or potential backlash, you know, he'll stalk me, he'll find me, it'll be worse if I leave. What advice do you have for that person?
Well, the first thing I would say is that you're not alone. You're in very good company, actually. There are so many people being abused right now, and also so many strong, amazing people who have successfully left abusive relationships. The second thing is that you do not have to leave today. And I would advise you not to, because you need a very clear plan on how you're going to leave and how you're going to make sure that you get custody of your children, if you have children, that you have enough money to help yourself. So you've got to have a plan. But the thing that you can do today is to tell somebody. Tell somebody who you trust, who you know is kind and strong, who will help you. It could be somebody you work with. It could be a family member. You could call one of the many hotlines that you can call that are confidential. You need to break the silence and tell somebody because you can't break through denial and trauma bonding on your own. You need help and you need a lot of help. And it's very powerful to break the silence and to know that there's at least one other person who's kind of in that terrible psychological maelstrom with you who is going to help you over time when you need help.
Yeah. And there are shelters for abused women as well. You know, I don't know if there would be one in your particular area, but you know, you should check to see. And then there is the domestic abuse hotline.
Yes.
I just want to make sure people know that they can call that if they need to as well.
Yeah, we'll post the information again in the show notes and with this episode because I think, you know, the point that you make, Leslie, that the first step is sort of reaching out for the help or being able to break your silence because it becomes something in my experience and then in the experience of everyone I've ever worked with who's been a victim of domestic violence, it becomes a shameful thing to talk about, a shameful thing for you to be able to say, I'm being abused, I've allowed this to happen, or you feel that. So it's important to be able to reach out, and that is that first step to breaking free, to moving past and escaping the relationship, perhaps.
Right. There's only one person who should be ashamed, and that is the person who's hurting you. And I'm not even sure that they should be ashamed, because often they were victims originally too, but you have to hold them responsible for what they're doing. And I highly recommend calling the hotline, the National Domestic Violence Hotline, because they can help you find shelter in your area. They can help you find a lot of resources. And what I want to pass on is that this country is actually a good place to be a domestic violence victim, because overall, our society agrees that abuse is wrong, and there are a tremendous number of financial resources, shelters, lawyers who understand domestic violence. And that's one of the most important things that you're going to need eventually, is a lawyer who really understands how psychologically complex domestic violence is and what resources you have in your community. And there are often a lot of resources that, of course, you would never know about as a victim, but that a good lawyer knows about.
And I also want to point out that if you've been a victim of domestic violence from a particular person over and over again, if that person comes back to you and says, it'll never happen again, I swear this time, I promise, I've changed, I'm sorry, it's going to happen again.
Abuse always gets worse. And the only thing you can do to help yourself and to help the person who you love is to leave. And to find a way to leave safely.
Yeah. Well, you know, Leslie, your story did not end with that abusive relationship. You have gone on and had many more adventures. I don't know that was an adventure, but in your TED talk, you talk about your second husband. You're now divorced from him, but you had another epiphany and learning experience in that relationship. And can you tell us about that?
Yes. So after my abusive first marriage ended, I married a man who I was married to for 20 years. We had three wonderful kids together. And in some ways, we had a really happy marriage on the outside. It looked that way. But I found that I had lost myself in marriage and motherhood and sort of trying to become the perfect wife and the perfect mother. So at 49, I found myself getting divorced again. And I felt unattractive and desexualized and not valued after years of this unhappy marriage. And to my astonishment, especially ironic for an abuse victim, I decided that what I needed to do to find myself again was actually men. I needed men, and I needed a lot of them. I needed kind, thoughtful men who really cherished me to kind of reconnect me to myself. And I had this crazy idea that I wanted to have five boyfriends for a year. And what was even crazier is that I went out and did it. And then the craziest thing of all is that I wrote a book about it. I wrote a book that just came out called The Naked Truth.
Oh, I have to just say that you said you were going to send me your books. So I was like, okay, you know, and I started reading Crazy Love. I mean, no,
The Naked Truth.
And I was like, oh my God, this is like Erica Jong's Fear of Flying for today's woman. It's fantastic. And I mean, and what's really funny is that you initially said, I don't know, even know if I even ever want to have sex again.
I know. It's
you got over that.
I know. And you know, what I rediscovered is that I love being a woman. I've always loved being a woman. I love sex. I love men. And the fact that I was abused and had two unhappy marriages didn't change any of that. And I think that truly being a feminist is really owning who you are at various points of time in our life. And the journey continues. And you know, we all have a right to be safe in our homes, but we also have the right to be sexual when we want to be. So in some ways, The Naked Truth is a really natural sequel to Crazy Love, as kind of as paradoxical as that actually seems.
But it's fantastic, especially, you know, being over 50, and a lot of women feel like, oh, I can't ever get a boyfriend over 50. All the men my age want somebody who's 20 or whatever. But you even had younger boyfriends.
Well, yeah, that was the thing that was funny. All five of the boyfriends turned out to be younger. And I
know.
Knew. There are a lot of great men out there. And I think just like in Crazy Love, the lesson was don't listen to our society's messages about what it means to be a woman. That's the same message in The Naked Truth, is you got to write your own rules and live your own life and, you know, be your own fairy godmother and take care of yourself.
Well, and it's a wonderful lesson, too, that, you know, as you said, you had your first relationship that was abusive, that you moved beyond, your second marriage that looked perfect on the outside. But when you read The Naked Truth, you see that there were some things missing. And you still went on with hope and courage and faced the world and went after what you wanted. And I'm only halfway through The Naked Truth, but I have to, as soon as Rebecca described it to me, I downloaded it on my Kindle and I will be finishing it.
That's so great. And the audio version is me reading it. It's just, it's a really intimate and open look at what it means to be a woman in her 50s. And, you know, women in their 50s, I don't know about other women, but what I see is that we feel more comfortable in our skin than we did when we were younger, which is ironic because we're definitely not, you know, it's not the same body as it was at 19. And I found that there are a lot of men out there who are really forgiving and understanding. And I don't know, I love male energy. As much as I love being a woman, I really think that the answer is not to say that all men are terrible and that we can't have them in our lives. I just think that we need to have the right ones in our lives, the ones who really treat us well, and who show us and allow us to show what true love is really all about.
Well, you are such a powerful inspiration. And I think it just goes back to what I say all the time, and that is every single thing that happens to us, good or bad, is a lesson, and we learn from it, and it makes us who we are today. It makes us a better person. And you've taken all of these experiences and you know, it's a metamorphosis for you. You've gone from that little cocoon into a total butterfly at this point. And so I think a lot of women could look at you and go, wow, if she could do it, maybe I can do it too.
They definitely can do it. You know, there's absolutely no doubt. And I'm just so lucky to be a writer who gets to tell these stories, because I connect around the world with so many women. And I, you know, this is the story of every woman, both Crazy Love and The Naked Truth. And I don't know, I think it's a wonderful time to be a woman. Women are endlessly fascinating. And as you said, every step of the journey is the journey, especially when you're a woman. And I'm just grateful to both of you for having me on and allowing me to talk about all these really rich and varied subjects of what it means to be a woman today.
Well, and I think that's, you know, what's so wonderful about your journey is that you're so willing to share it, because you share a lot of it. But it's a wonderful resource on all of these subjects. And it's a, you know, between the two books, there's such growth and openness and freedom in what you say. And by the way, they're funny too at times, people. There's a lot of humor in there.
This could be the domestic violence and dating in your 50s could be funny, but it is, everything in life has a funny angle.
Yeah, there's a good one that you have about mommies too.
Yes, that's true too.
So we are running close to the end of our time, but and this information that we've managed to get into these 30 minutes, I know is going to be of great help to our listeners, but we want them to know we have really just skimmed the top surface of some difficult topics. So where can our listeners get your books, find out more about you, and get in touch with you?
Well, all four of my books are available in any bookstore, independent, online, everywhere. You can also come to my website, lesliebooks.com, and there's more information there about the books and about me. And also on that site is my email, my real email. I check it, you know, as we do many times a day, and I love to hear from readers. It's one of the most wonderful things about being a writer today is that by telling my story, I connect with people around the world and they tell me their stories, and it just enriches my life so much. So I really love to hear from readers.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for
being
a powerful inspiration, and we'll put all the information in our show notes as well.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you for joining us today on Breaking Free, a Modern Divorce podcast. I'm Rebecca Zung.
And I'm Susan Guthrie. Breaking Free Mediation is proud to be the very first family law mediation centers in the country to offer a mindfulness track. Breaking Free Mediation, helping you resolve your family law matter peacefully. Learn more at www.breakingfreemediation.com.
Also, make sure to download your free calming meditation from renowned meditation and energy expert, Scott Picard, at www.breakingfreefromdivorce.com/free meditation.
Check back next Monday for our next edition of our powerful, inspirational, and educational podcast. And if you enjoyed today's podcast, please remember to give us a 5-star rating and let us know what you liked in a review on iTunes.
And remember, you're just one step away from your new life.